AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. Corn and wheat futures pushed through last week's high as a convoy of military equipment makes its way to the Ukrainian capital. Equities are sharply lower, and it looks like all the markets are factoring in ideas the economic disruption caused by the Russian invasion will last longer than originally thought. Oh, and crude oil is way past $100 a barrel.
Live from the March Towards Spring via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with a conversation with Jacob Shapiro from Perch Perspectives. Then it's Ron Alverson from the American Coalition for Ethanol. Right after the news, Karen Bonert from Farm Journal's Milk. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Hello. Hi, everyone. Hello. And now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis. Hey, thank you so much. Yeah, let's see. Taking a look at the April crude oil contract, the last quote that I've got, up $8.66 a barrel, $104.38, dude.
Hey-o.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nothing spells $4 gasoline at the pump like $100 a barrel crude, huh?
I don't care about any of that. I got spring between the ears, bro. I got spring between the ears. The sun is shining. Birds are chirping. It's gorgeous outside. It's March. Huh?
Yep. Yeah. Huh? Man, I wish I could go there with you.
Let's go.
I really do.
Come on.
I see.
Come over the happiness bridge.
I mean, yeah, I think I got to stay focused on what's happening in these markets, Davis.
Well, let's talk about the other markets then, because it's not all like dire, scary things like $104 oil, right?
Okay. Yeah. We've got corn 35 to 40 cents higher.
Huh?
We've got soybeans, we'll just call it 40 to 50 cents higher.
Okay.
Soybean meal, you know, is $4.5 to $5.5 higher.
Mm-hmm.
324 points higher in May soybean oil.
Mm-hmm.
75.76 there.
Mm-hmm.
Wheat futures up 45 to 50 cents.
You might say they sprang higher.
Mm? Well, yeah, I guess you could say that.
There you go.
I wouldn't even call that a spring. Say that they sprang higher. That is another rocket shot.
That's the spirit.
We've got corn. We've got wheat trading through the highs that were posted last week. That would suggest that attitudes have changed toward the Russian invasion of Ukraine. That it's going to last longer than originally thought.
Okay.
I can't wait for the conversation with Jacob Shapiro from Perch Perspectives.
Yeah.
They take a unique view of issues, and this is no exception. His ideas of what information we can trust and what information we have to question, I think is really, really important right now. And like I said, I can't wait to get to that conversation. Let's go ahead and get to the news. What do you got?
Sure thing. Well, Chip, delegations from Russia and Ukraine agreed to continue negotiations after a meeting on the border with Belarus ended with few signs of progress. Russian shelling pounded civilian targets in Ukraine's second largest city again today, and a 40-mile convoy of tanks and other vehicles threatened the capital. Tactics Ukraine's embattled president said were designed to force him into concessions in Europe's largest ground war in generations, this according to the AP, Chip.
Davis, I got to ask, when did Kiev become Kiev?
I have wondered that too. Kiev.
What is that? Is that just way of saying it?
I'm old school. I'm sticking with Kiev myself.
Okay. I'm with you. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. European energy prices have risen 335% over the last year and 26% over the last 5 days, Chip.
Oh,
White House
man.
Press Secretary Jen Psaki said Monday, which is a major reason that major energy sanctions have not been imposed against Russia so far. While sanctioning energy would certainly affect Russia's income, it would also have, quote, extreme consequences on the world's energy markets, particularly for our allies in Europe, Psaki argued. And that does make sense, you know?
Yeah. Yeah,
that's a fine line there.
It's a very fine line. I get the you don't. Well, it's one of the reasons that they launched the invasion when they did. It's because you can't. The Europeans cannot cut off Russian natural gas right now. It'll get cold if they do. They can't do it.
Well, President Joe Biden will grasp a chance to pivot on several areas tonight when he delivers his first State of the Union address to U.S. lawmakers. The speech has already seen a substantial rewrite since Russia's invasion and will include a rebranding of his Build Back Better initiatives. And I had to rewrite a chunk of the landowner newsletter over the weekend. I was busy, bro. I feel Biden's pain on this one.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. We need a strong performance from the president in the State of the Union address.
Yes.
We need it.
Well, on the eve of Biden's State of the Union address, centrist Senator Joe Manchin urged the administration to boost domestic energy production, saying he was planning weeks of hearings on energy independence, both for the U.S. and to support NATO allies.
He is not a very popular man in the Democrat Party, is he?
At the moment, no.
I mean,
not at all.
Opposite direction.
Yep. Well, Reuters reports President Biden is sending a delegation of former senior defense and security officials to Taiwan. The U.S. trade deficit in goods hit a fresh record in January. The White House announced on Monday that President Biden will host an Association of Southeast Asian Nations summit in Washington on March 28 and 29. The AP reports that the summit is, quote, billed by the White House as an opportunity to demonstrate the U.S. commitment to that bloc. Chip.
All right, Davis, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Let's bring in Karen Boner, the editor of Farm Journal's Milk. How are you, Karen?
Hey, I'm good, Chip. Happy Tuesday.
Yeah, happy Tuesday to you, too. Production trends across the country are mixed. Some states are up, some states are down. But, boy, South Dakota is pointed in one direction, right?
They definitely stood out in an otherwise bleak milk production report. Overall, year-over-year in cow numbers are down 1.6% and cow numbers have dropped for the eighth consecutive month. But South Dakota, like you said, they stood out. They're up at an impressive 18.3%. And South Dakota has worked hard to increase their cow numbers and bring in new dairies as well as processors. So, of course, it takes processors, right? You have to have a processor if you want to grow milk production. One producer told me it takes smart growth. You don't want to outproduce your processing capacity. It also takes water to grow those forages, and you need to be fairly close location to processing plants, especially with rising fuel costs and trucker shortages, to help drive the growth. And that development along that I-29 corridor illustrates this point. Although one South Dakota producer outlined a very good point, while pretty much every farmer in South Dakota has a combine, that does not mean that they have to sell you corn silage, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, and I also think, Chip, it's worth mentioning that producers must have a secure relationship with their processors before producing more milk or moving into a state, not just assuming that they can grow their cow numbers or, bring in a new dairy from out of state. So South Dakota certainly did stand out in otherwise bleak milk production report.
All right. Good stuff, Karen. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right. Thanks, Chip.
You bet. You bet. That is Karen Bonert. She is the editor of Farm Journal's Milk. All right. Listeners, Davis, are chiming in. This listener says it's pronounced Kiev in Ukraine and Kiev in Russia.
Oh, okay. So maybe, puts us in a difficult position.
Yeah, maybe we do have to go with Kiev.
Maybe we go Kiev.
And this listener says, tell Davis, haven't seen any turkey vultures yet, so don't get too excited about spring.
Deep cut.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
The best talkers in ag, including you. Join the conversation on ag.
Yeah, don't need to
don't
do
Don't join it. You can join
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I like that
just
mashup,
not that
though.
Way.
Crazy Chain and September. Yes. I mean, that what a perfect bump for the conversation that we're about to have, because it is a crazy, crazy time in a mashed up kind of way.
Good tie
in the markets right now.
Well done.
That's why we're here. You know,
that's why we get the medium bucks.
That's right. That's right. Oh, my gosh. Okay. You know, let's just jump right into it, because I want to get Jacob Shapiro in here. Jacob is the founder and the chief strategist at Perch Perspectives. And according to the website, Perch Perspectives advises business executives and policymakers on the historical, cultural, geographic, political, and economic forces that impact international affairs and decision-making. Jacob, welcome to AgriTalk. How are you?
You know, I've been getting plenty of sleep. There's nothing that much going on in the world. Doing just fine. How about you?
Yeah, same. Same, same, same. I hear you, man. Let's start off with learning a little bit more about Perch Perspectives. Who uses Perch Perspectives, and what do they expect from your team?
Sure. So we're a human-centric business and political consulting firm. So we're helping companies in a number of different industries, the agriculture industry, the tech manufacturing industry, even in the investment community, helping them understand how geopolitical risk is going to affect their supply chains or their investments, how to prepare for geopolitical risk, and then how to adapt when you get crises moments like the ones that we're living through right now.
Okay. I would imagine that because of the supply that originates out of the Black Sea region, out of Russia, out of Ukraine, for the agricultural markets, the demands for your time, as you indicated, are probably through the roof right now. What is the latest? I think I want to start with this. Is the Ukrainian resistance as significant as some are saying?
Yeah, so that's a great place to start. And I should also say, you should take everything you're seeing out there with a certain grain of salt, because all sides, even the Ukrainian sides, are trying to present an image that they want to pull on your heartstrings. The Ukrainian side wants you to think that they are resisting, that they have a chance, and that they want more help. You know, I try to be very clinical and apathetic about this because that's my job, but it's hard not to feel a certain affinity for them. But look, I think obviously the Ukrainians have done a good job, but this is more about the incompetence of the Russians in the first phase of this invasion. It seems pretty clear that the Russians thought that this was going to be easy, that they were just going to get into the capital in Kiev and decapitate the government, install their own pro-Russian regime, hang up a mission accomplished banner, and then roll the tanks home, like they just did in Kazakhstan and as they did in Belarus last year. Ukraine is not Kazakhstan and Ukraine is not Belarus. They're facing a lot of opposition. What I'm worried about here is that there's been a little bit of a lull. Well, until yesterday, there was a bit of a lull in Russia's operational pace. And what you're seeing now is their logistical supply chains are catching up. Their air superiority is starting to be felt on the battlefield. And the sheer amount of Russia's numbers and its firepower is starting to assert itself. And that's the other thing I would say. We're very early on in this. This is a full-on war. The Ukrainians have been able to defend themselves for a couple of days. But the strength of the Russians here outclasses anything they have, and nobody's coming to Ukraine's rescue, unfortunately.
Right. The amount of the military force that Putin has unleashed to this point, is it true that it's just a fraction of what he's got available and ready to go?
Yes. I mean, again, we're having to parse reports of what's available, but I'm comfortable saying about two thirds of the forces that Putin has committed to this invasion are probably in Ukrainian territory right now. with a third in reserve. But what you're really seeing right now over the past couple of days, even as the Russians talk about negotiations, which I don't think we should take seriously, is you're seeing all those supply chains catch up. You're seeing the Russians realize this is going to be a longer, more protracted conflict. Let's reorganize our forces so that we can actually push on the center and then start going towards these major population centers. So honestly, they really haven't gone, even though two-thirds of their forces are probably in Ukraine at this moment, we haven't seen a concentrated attempt of the Russians to go at this. What we saw first was really a failed blitzkrieg attempt.
Right, right. Okay. You just said don't take the negotiation seriously. Why?
Well, again, because this is the information war. So the Ukrainians don't want to seem like they are rejecting negotiations out of hand. And the Russians don't want to seem unreasonable. They want to seem like they want peace. And their entire narrative around this invasion has been about demilitarizing Ukraine and what the Ukrainians have been doing to pro-Russians and Russian speakers in eastern Ukraine. So the reason I don't take it particularly seriously is because both sides right now have mutually exclusive demands. The Ukrainians are saying to the Russians, sure, we can have peace, just take all of your troops and leave. And the Russians are saying, sure, we can have peace, just have every single Ukrainian soldier lay down their arms. We'll sign a peace agreement right now. Until you see both sides not sort of playing this for popular consumption, but actually willing to make concessions, I think it's more about managing the information war and not reflecting any real progress.
Has Russian President Putin made up his mind of what he sees the only outcome being?
I'd be lying to you if I told you I knew what was in Putin's mind, and I'm not sure if I could even get into his mind that I'd want to be in Putin's mind.
Yeah.
Probably a pretty dark place. Yeah. I will say that he knows better than anybody else how precarious his position is, because he became prime minister, he's president now, but he became prime minister of Russia for the first time in 1999 because of a Russian financial crisis. The ruble got slapped in half. Russia was dealing with balance of payments issues because of the cost of the first Chechen war in the early 90s. That was what he rode to power. And for the last 20 plus years, the entire social contract in Russia has been, okay, we have this authoritarian dictator, but he instills order. So now you're in a position where Putin's decision in Ukraine has really is starting to affect the Russian economy. You're getting lines at banks. You're seeing, you know, the prospect of hyperinflation even. You're seeing Russia not able to access all these reserves that they've built up over the past 8 years. So I think that he realizes that his, not just his political future, but his life is really going to be determined on the moves that he makes. And I don't think he's behaving like somebody who is going to get trigger shy just because he got a bloody nose in the first couple of days.
Okay. What's the timeline on this conflict?
Well, that's a great question, and is honestly probably one of the things from the agricultural perspective to watch the most, because you know, Ukrainian planters are supposed to be sowing their spring barley and wheat and all, you know, their corn, their sunflower. That's all supposed to happen at the end of March, early April. So if we are still having this conversation in 3 to 4 weeks time, this becomes, I mean, it's still going to be a major conflict in Eastern Europe for sure. But a lot of those, the effect on global commodities, I think, is going to change a lot. The answer to your question is I don't have a good sense of the timeline right now. We know that it's taken the Russians longer than they expected to achieve their first objective. I think these next couple of days are really critical, because we're going to know in the next couple of days, are the Russians really going to push forward? Are they going to try and retreat and save face? And then we're going to see if the Russians, having recalibrated their forces, are able to make more headway than they had in the past. I would think that Russia is probably, that this conflict is going to get very brutal and very bloody in sort of the next week or so, and that Russia will start to assert control at that point. But this is one of the reasons analysts like me hate war, because anything can happen in war. You try to avoid war because one commander doing the wrong thing or one errant missile falling in the wrong territory can escalate things greatly. So I think my best guess is, you know, in the next week or two, this is going to get very grim, but the Russians are going to start asserting control. But that's not a foregone conclusion.
Okay. We need to specifically go to agriculture, and is it the risk to the 2022 crops, even getting the crops planted, is that the number one risk for agriculture right now in the conflict?
That's the one that's most serious to me, because I think it has the most far-reaching effect, but there are some more immediate risks we need to think about.
Okay.
Your listeners probably know that, you know, Ukrainian commercial ports have been shut down for 5 days now, and there's no sign they're going to be open anytime soon. The Russians have been blocking all commercial ships out of the Sea of Azov going through the Black Sea. And then Turkey has kind of reared its head and said, we're shutting down all traffic out of the Black into the Black Sea and out of the Black Sea for military ships. That's not commercial ships, but it's not a far stretch to start imagining, well, if Turkey's limiting military ships, what does that mean for commercial ships? I know that I've talked to some, you know, international clients who are having a very difficult time even getting ships or thinking about how sanctions are going to affect them, even two or three tiers down their supply chain. So I'm in the immediate term, we're watching for how long do these disruptions at the commercial ports last? Is there any chance that actual maritime traffic is going to be affected by some of these military considerations? And then the second order and much more serious issue to me would be if we have to talk again in 4 weeks and this is still ongoing and we're talking about Ukrainian planters not being able to get to their fields.
Okay. All right. Jacob, we are out of time. I sure enjoyed the conversation. I appreciate the perspectives that you have brought to the show. I sure hope that we can do it again sometime soon.
Anytime you want. I won't be sleeping very much for the next few weeks, so you just give me a call.
Sounds great. Thank you so much, Jacob. That is Jacob Shapiro. He is the founder and chief strategist at Perch Perspectives. We're going to have a conversation with South Dakota farmer Ron Alverson next.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farm incentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady joins us right now. Beach, through last week's highs in corn and wheat futures today. That's an impressive move.
Absolutely. We've got the most active winter wheat contracts trading limit up here mid-morning. And so, just another explosive move driven by Russia and Ukraine. And, you know, I could make up anything else, but literally that's what it would be making it up, because this is Russia, Ukraine, and the impacts and concerns to global trade. Grain flows coming out of Ukraine are halted. Grain flows coming out of Russia are probably reduced at this point in time. And there's all kinds of talk of demand shifting all over the world, including the United States.
Right. Okay. And as long as we're talking about the impact there, we might as well talk real quickly about the money flow, because equity is sharply lower. Seems like that money is coming to the long side of the grains.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've seen that. The commodities here recently have shot to the upside. Stock market, because of the concerns, there are two different things there. The concerns drive equities down and generally drive commodities up because of supply concerns, and that's exactly what's happening right now.
All right. Lean hog futures, they caught a bid.
Yeah. They fourth day down yesterday, but exploded higher this morning. Just really strong recovery to the upside. So it looks like nothing more than a correction over the past 4 days. We'll see where it goes from here. Live cattle, they tried to work higher early on, but as selling in feeder cattle has accelerated through the morning here, we've now traded with a mixed tone in live cattle.
All right, good stuff, Brian. Thank you. That is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. The truth is hard to come by these days, unless you listen to AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Glad that you could be with us this morning. Davis?
Chip.
I think we are going to keep Jacob Shapiro's phone number handy.
Let's keep it at the near the top of the stack.
Right.
I'd like to talk to that guy more myself. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he said he won't be sleeping. I mean, maybe we could call him in the middle of the night.
Maybe we, wouldn't that
just
be
check him up on it.
Him?
Sure. Yeah, our guests love that sort of thing.
Yeah, they love it when we bug them like that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What are you doing?
Yeah. The perspective about how everything that we hear coming out of Ukraine, coming out of Russia in the early days of the conflict is propaganda.
I wrote that down. Yep.
Yeah. Ukraine wants the information that is coming out of the conflict to tug at everybody's heartstrings. Mm-hmm. And I think it is. I think they can claim mission accomplished on that. The world I'm not saying that there was a lot of support out there for Putin to begin with,
mm-hmm.
but he is the number one bad guy in the world right now.
Yes.
No question about that. And Ukrainian President Zelensky is rock star status, hero status, whatever.
Sure.
However you want to describe it. And the momentum on global support is clearly on Ukraine's side at this point. Okay. Let's get to a conversation now with Ron Alverson. Ron is a member of the American Coalition for Ethanol, member of the Dakota Ethanol Board. He's a founder of South Dakota Corn Growers, and as Ron describes it, a student of corn production and greenhouse gas accounting and modeling. Ron, it's good to talk with you, man. How are you?
Doing great.
Great, thank great, you. Great. You bet. Okay. So, Ron, this paper that was released from University of Wisconsin, Tyler Lark was the lead author on it. But when I read it, it just felt wrong on several different levels. And you did some work to point out where there were some misrepresentations of the industry in the study. Let's just start with your first one. What's one of the biggest?
Well, they describe in the paper that ethanol, the RFS in particular, drove about 5.5 billion gallons of additional ethanol production. Mm-hmm. And because it raised the price of corn, and they quote in the paper, from 2008 to 2016 by 30%. Well, anybody can kind of Google that up and look at the websites and look at the price of corn from 2008 to 2016.
Yeah.
And through that entire period, it went down 25%.
Yeah.
Now, midpoint, it was up some, but through the entire period, it was down 25%. And, you have to point out that these guys looked at economic models and said, well, it would have been up 30% if that additional ethanol production wouldn't occur. So they can kind of make a case for that, but it's pretty counterfactual to what actually happened.
Right. Right. Which brings me to a question, Ron. Why in several spots, I caught myself looking at the report from Wisconsin and saying, wait a second, that's not right. But then when you read it closely, it said based on modeling. Why base it on modeling when there's actual history available?
Well, that's because that's the only way they can make it make ethanol and corn production look bad. You can make a model kind of say whatever you want it to say based on the inputs that you put into it, the factors you use. So, in my mind, it was just a character assassination of ethanol and corn.
Oh,
and it was curiously timed right ahead of this EPA. EPA is going to do a new review on land use change, carbon emissions, and the whole smear, the whole corn to ethanol carbon intensity accounting. So, I think the whole point of this whole LARC study was to inject more uncertainty into this, which are clear facts that corn ethanol reduces carbon intensity by more than 50%, and it's getting lower every year.
Right. And Ron, and I know you know this, but my gosh, the reason that they're doing the study on land use and everything is because implementation of the RFS is going to change after 2022. And EPA is going to have even more to say with how much is blended than what they do right now. It just, like you said, the timing stinks. It doesn't feel right at all.
Yeah, I attended. They had the first day of the workshop with the EPA now, where they listen in to various experts on the carbon intensity of corn ethanol. And yesterday was a really good day for our side. They had Bill Hohenstein from the USDA on there talking about, you know, there really hasn't been any land use change. And then they had Stephen Ogle, who's a Descent modeler. Descent is the sole carbon model. And he's done all this extensive modeling, and this model is really based on good field measurements. And he said across the Midwest, you know, soil carbon is increasing. They've got good data to and that's because of corn, probably because corn is kind of the king at that. It just produces so much unharvested carbon in the biomass, it adds to the soil every year. And he said this far outweighs any soil carbon loss from the small land use change that he has seen.
Wow.
So it just really undercut what LARC's whole argument is in the paper.
Wow.
Now I hope EPA listens to that, but you know, they try to listen to everybody. So it's the best man wins, I guess.
Well, yeah. And hopefully the strongest argument wins, but that isn't always the case. We know that. Ron, Give us some facts that the average ethanol supporter can take with them into conversations about greenhouse gas reductions from that have resulted from the RFS. Give me some facts.
You know, when the RFS, before the RFS was enacted, the modeling, the GREET, and I keep referring to the GREET model because they are, the U.S. Department of Energy does this model called the GREET model, and most people use that now all over the world.
Okay.
So I think you look to them for the most honest assessment. And back in, say, 2005 or 6, or even before that, when the GREET modelers started accounting for that, they said corn ethanol would probably provide about a 70%, or would be probably provide about a 30% reduction versus gasoline for total greenhouse gases, like life cycle. Now, over those years, and primarily driven by the California Low Carbon Fuel Standard, ethanol plants have got all these incentives to reduce the carbon intensity. They have reduced their energy use, their electrical use through various practices and low carbon implementation at those ethanol plants. And now the average is, you know, less than 50%. So we've dropped 20 points in the last, say, 10, 15 years. And it's going lower. You hear about these new CO2 pipelines. Well, ethanol just happens to be the primary target of those because we can capture all this pure stream of CO2 coming off our fermentation tanks, and they can put it in this pipeline and sequester it in geological reservoirs. It stays there forever. So it really reduces, and it will reduce the carbon intensity of ethanol another 25 points, and then we'll be 75% below gasoline.
Man. Ron, it sounds to me like you are a supporter of the CO2 pipelines and the process.
Absolutely. You know, it makes so much sense, and it just fits our industry so well. And, you know, climate mitigation is important. It clearly, you know, most people in the world now think that this is a big issue. So, and the science points us to that direction. So this is a great opportunity for our industry.
What do you think the odds are that these pipelines are going to become reality?
Dakota Ethanol, that's the plant that I'm affiliated with and live pretty close by here. We are part of this Summit Carbon Solutions pipeline effort. And those guys are optimistic, but, you know, we got a long ways to go. They tell us now that they've got about 50% of the right-of-way easements secured.
Oh.
So I think it's going pretty good. But, you know, we're probably getting an optimistic view that they're giving us that, you know, you got to be optimistic when you start out these things, this a big project like this. So, but I think it's reasonable that will happen. You know, this is way different than trying to build a petroleum pipeline where you get a huge pushback by many different groups. So, right. Because this is much safer, CO2 isn't flammable. So the only danger that you have from CO2 is if you happen to be standing right next to a huge burst and leak, and the CO2 can take the oxygen out of there. So, but it's not flammable. It's not going to blow up. It's not going to pollute groundwater. It's not going to pollute the land if it does have a leak.
Right, right. Well, Ron, you have been a leader in the renewable fuels push for agriculture for many, many years. I have no idea why I've not had you on the show to talk with you before, Ron, but I'm sure glad that we got that fixed, and we'll do it again.
All right. Well, glad to be on. Nice to talk with you guys today.
Very good. Very good. That is Ron Alverson. I'll just call him a South Dakota farmer and a biofuel supporter. Davis and I will be right back to wrap up this morning's AgriTalk.
You suffer from talking on the radio phobia? No problem. Send us a tweet at hashtag AgriTalk.
AgriTalk indeed, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in on this Tuesday morning. Davis Michelson here, your pal with Chip Flory.
Yes.
Couple of good conversations there. A lot in today's show. Good to hear from Jacob Shapiro to begin with, and then Ron Alverson, man, couple of great guys. A theme emerged. I don't know if you noticed. I don't know if you noticed. Well, here, this from Ron Alverson. You can make a model say whatever you want it to say.
Yeah.
We had Jacob Shapiro talking about, well, a lot of the coverage, there's Russian propaganda, there's Ukrainian propaganda.
Yep.
And it sort of makes me think about, we'll begin in the context of the conflict between Russia and Ukraine. I mean, we live in a universe that just sort of lives on information overload. I mean, it's about optics, it's about nuance. And then you couple that with instant communication with minimal accountability.
Yeah.
I mean, dude, I could write a story right now that says, I don't know, I have three arms and the whole, you know, thing, and put it out there on the internet, and somebody would read it and believe it.
Sure.
And there would be no real, you know, standard of, hey, man, what are you doing? You don't have three arms. You can't put that out there.
Exactly. Nah.
Just from my living room, I could make that happen. And it's no different on that global international scale, whether it be a conflict over, you know, in Russia and Ukraine, or whether it be about ethanol here in the United States.
Propagandist dream.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Is the ability to spread information that they pick and choose as widespread and as freely as they possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
That's why, as a consumer of that information, you've got a set of responsibilities that comes along with it.
Yes.
You've got to verify. You've question it. Does this make sense? Oh, does it matter?
That's an interesting thought.
You've got to question everything. And
because the accountability has shifted from the writer, from the producer of said content, to the consumer of content.
When we talk about social media, absolutely.
Wow.
Absolutely. The world is full of twit spurts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Experts that Twitter has created. And if you question, if you question them on the platform, typically their response is very simple. They'll just block you.
Right.
Okay. And that if someone has a strong history of blocking the conversation, of blocking the questioning of mm-hmm. the information that they're putting out, yeah, well, most likely the information is not worth it to begin
right.
with. Some of it might be right, but sorting it out isn't worth the time.
Right. Yep.
In the situation that we're in now, we are going, you've got to question everything. You've got to sort it out. You've got to make it pass the smell test.
Mm-hmm.
If it stinks, it stinks. Don't use it. During the show, we got a text or a tweet suggesting that we follow someone that is a farmer in Ukraine that mm-hmm. as we speak is putting a crop in the ground.
Oh, man.
While also paying attention to the invasion.
Sure.
Now, it came during the show. Am I going to tell you what that site is? Not right now. I'm going to check it out. I'm going to take a look. I'm going to try to figure out, does this make sense? Does it look staged?
Mm-hmm.
My initial take on it is, this is fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
But fake can be fascinating too. But
absolutely.
This looks very real. We'll figure it out.
One thing that I've tried to cultivate in myself, given this environment that we're in, information-wise, is, and it's not always easy, but the ability to look at something, to read something, to digest something without internalizing it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You can look at a concept or a story or, you know, and really investigate it and dig deep without committing yourself to believing that it's true immediately.
Right.
In other words, take some time to allow the story to prove or disprove itself. Just like what you said, you have to follow the rabbit trails if you want
exactly.
to get to the truth.
The problem is on most stories, what triggers that follow-up to prove the information, what triggers it is, oh, I believe that. I got to find out more from this guy.
Right.
Or, what a load of crap. I don't believe that. And I'm going to mm-hmm. prove that it's wrong.
Yep.
It's not, that's good information, I think. I need to figure it out.
Yep.
So, difficult trying to figure it all out. The markets, however.
Yes.
Digest it very, very quickly and put it into action. And we've now got $105 April crude oil futures up $9. Well, it's $105.63, up $9.91 is the last quote that I've got there. May corn's up 35 cents. We've still got wheat limit up, the winter wheat, excuse me. And wow, look at that. Spring wheat is knocking on the door. We've got 300 to 350, 330 point gains in soybean oil. Call it $5.50 to $7 gains in soybean meal. So the gains that we talked about at the start of the show mm-hmm. are building even as the pressure on the equities intensifies. So as we talked about with Beej, money rolling out of equities and into the commodities. We'll talk more about that this afternoon with Clayton Pope, Clayton Pope Commodities, right here on AgriTalk.